Well, good evening.
Good evening.
While we're sitting and as we talk tonight, Vanya is on national television on the Geographic channel talking about the medical uses of LSD. It would have to be tonight, of course, from 7 to 8. But it's also going to be on Saturday afternoon at 4. So if you can get that channel, that's one of his many subjects that he's passionate about is the uses of LSD. And they have found, they've finally gotten permission to do legitimate experiments, and they have some science projects now working with people. They find that it's extremely helpful for the dying, that it not only eliminates the fear, usually always the fear falls away, but the pain does too. So the idea is to find ways to make our passage have some ease. It's one of those tricky subjects, and we all know, we're all old enough to know what kind of commotion it can cause and what a lot of grief it can cause as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it develops and how Vanya expresses himself about it. In the meantime, I have another handout. Thank you, Julian. And I thought we talked about it last time before the Sigaki. But I thought it would be helpful to talk about shunyata, emptiness, again. And in this case, Koban gave a very nice example. Thanks a lot. That I thought might be helpful. He gave this example when we were discussing the Platform Sutra, which was the very first subject that I ever studied with him. It was in the Monday morning group, and he was sitting next to a woman named Gert, who I thought then was an old lady, though she wasn't nearly as old as I am now. And she had a leather purse sitting right next to her. And Koban picked up the purse. And he used that as his example for shunyata. And he said, "I don't know what's in there, but by holding it like this, to feel emptiness means your concern penetrates into all helpers which brought this to me. You can imagine 100 million hands which made this possible. Not only that, but this material is part of a cow. That portion of the cow, when it was alive, from which this part was made, somehow it's almost impossible to imagine. So it is not just the word empty. Maybe we should use non-substantiality because of the innumerable conditions which made this possible. No substantiality doesn't mean just no self or no existence. It means the existence is made up of all existence. Everything went into every moment, goes into every moment. And that's what emptiness is. In a way, you can say fullness. And then out of that, we separate and distinguish things. We separate ourself and distinguish ourself. That's the form side. And this isn't saying that we should eliminate the form side. It's saying we can't eliminate the form side because it is emptiness itself. It's utterly interconnected. In the next one, he also gives another example that I will tell you now, but we can talk about it next week with the all dharmas are marked with emptiness, because it's about all dharmas and that part of the sutra. But another example he used was, if I say I'm a mother, it means that I must have children, because children define my motherness. So I can say, I used to be able to say I was a wife, and that meant that I had a husband. And now I have to say I'm an ex-wife, which I hate to say, but that also defines me in terms of something else, in terms of relationship. So every way that we try to talk about something, we're always talking about something else. Isn't that interesting? It has to be that way because it's all hooked up together. And that being hooked up together means that nothing is a stable, fixed thing. You know, I'm no longer a wife. I was a wife, now I'm not a wife. I was young, now I'm old. And yet, you have to say that you can't define anything ultimately except as emptiness. We ourselves are the emptiness that we try to imagine. It's as if the great depths and the heights of everything are right here in our life. As Alan Watts always said, we're the universe looking at itself through our eyes. It's you. So Dogen had this little poem, "The entire universe is the true human body. The entire universe is the gate of liberation. The entire universe is the eye of Vairochana Buddha. The entire universe is the Dharma body of the self. The true human body means your own true body. Know that the entire universe is your own true body, which is not a temporary body." Oh, here it is about being the husband and the wife. So these last words are also by Coben. He said, "Form is emptiness. This is our wisdom, that we're not fooled by the formness of things. We're so wise that we can see through the forms and see that form is emptiness. But when you say emptiness is form, this tells what compassion is. That's being willing to stay with form, with a kind heart and a helpful heart." He said, "Wisdom is the process of returning to compassion." So as we practice our wisdom, practice seeing how things truly are and how our own life truly is, we're able to allow ourselves more and more latitude to suffer with everyone, suffer our own suffering, and suffering with the world. When we say form, really, in a way, we mean suffering. the world of form is tough on a soft body. And the world of form is tough just because of the way it works. And human being is a very is a struggle. There's much pain in it, as we all know. So it's essential to see the empty side of life, not just for ourselves, but for everything. Call it crossing the river. The Prajna Paramita is crossing the river and seeing that really the world of suffering is the world of enlightenment itself. But I want to remind you that all of these ideas, all of this that we are trying to understand, is all based on meditation practice. It all comes from the depths of our practice itself. It isn't that somebody sat down at a desk somewhere and figured it all out. It's an experience. And it's an experience that comes from hard practice. Hard practice of meditation in which one is willing to face things as they are. So it's very bracing, this. It's also very good news. You know, if we felt we were really stuck in this veil of tears, it would be pretty horrible. But as Buddha said, it's a veil of tears because we don't see. We don't see clearly how it is, how our mind works. Our mind is creating the suffering. Gobind said, without form, there is no way to realize that emptiness exists. So emptiness is not a vacuum or a voidness. And we should have a better word for it, and we don't. It's so frustrating. It's a terrible word because it points in a different, it points in the wrong direction. It doesn't say what it's trying to say. Thich Nhat Hanh uses interbeing, but that doesn't really do it either. So I think when we want to know what it really means, we just have to sit and experience it. Just be and discover what this is. Are there questions? Ritu?
So recently I've been struggling with the idea of boundaries and creating a space for myself and not getting caught up in other people's things. And I just was wondering, how does that relate to emptiness?
Well, it's taking care of yourself. And this is not saying, the whole concept of emptiness is not saying there's no self. It's saying there's no permanent self. We have to say I. And as Coben say here, I exist, but I don't exist. No. Something is existing here, and I have to say I about it. And you get up in the morning and you have to be Ritu, because that's what you got. And then there are all the issues about how to best take care of this life that we have and are. And creating enough space for us to breathe and live is very important. And it's so hard in this culture to give ourselves enough time and space for it. It's all about time and space, really. And often people don't appreciate it, that we're supposed to be busy all the time and always relating. And it becomes a kind of scramble that isn't healthy. And each one of us has our own way of being that. And it changes as we change too. So we're always trying to figure out, well, how am I supposed to do it now? What's the best way? How can I be the best way? And sometimes it's tough. I felt it especially when I had children, especially young children, and I had two other things that I really, really wanted to do. And when I was writing, I felt terrible that I wasn't with my children. And I also, when I went to Sesshin, I felt very badly that I wasn't writing and being with my children. We're constantly having to sort our way through. But if we're aware that all of these things are just ideas, they're ephemeral ideas, and we live through the ideas, but they're not anything you can hold on to.
Our nature, I think, is to always try to do too much.
Yep.
And especially, as you mentioned, in this particular geographic area with its culture, high achievement, endless work, 24/7.
Yep.
And I think that's a thing that really forced me to try to improve my practice over the past few years, because I was going crazy.
Yeah.
With, you know, work pressure and other things I do, family things. But, you know, so at some point you have to just say, well, isn't that fun? I'm doing this right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get this done today. Too bad.
Tomorrow is another day.
And you know, I can very well relate to your idea of too many conflicting activities. We think, well, they're all so important. I've got to be doing all these things. But only we decide that.
Yeah.
Nobody else said, you have to be doing these four or five things.
Right.
Somehow, you know, only we convince ourselves of that.
And there's some self-importance in there, I think, don't you?
That's really hard to let go of.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Wendy?
After you told us about your struggle, you know, being a mother and a writer, wife, studying the Dharma, and then you said, but it's just ideas. So, aside from our body, what else is there? I mean, aren't ideas also precious? I mean, relationships?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Precious? They're very precious, but they're not real.
They're not tangible.
They're not tangible, and they can be easily changed and are easily changed. They're not permanent in any way. So our struggle is that we get so attached to our ideas that we think that they're absolutely true. And I'm thinking of when I was the director at Chikoji, I thought that I had to keep on doing that, even though it got harder and harder. And I was completely wedded to that idea. You know, I didn't even think it through. I just hung on to it. And I had to be pried out of there, you know, kicked out just about, because it was making me sick. And I wasn't doing a good job. And it wasn't the right thing to be doing. But it's so easy to get wedded to an idea and think, you know, to identify with oneself with the idea of something. And the more flexible we are with our ideas, the more easily our life goes. I'm not saying no ideas, of course, but to see through them, to see that they're tentative, and to be willing to change them when they need to be changed, and to let go of what needs to be let go. It's hard sometimes, you know.
They are what gives our life meaning often.
Yes, yes. But all of those meanings that we give to our life are all tenuous and I don't know, how can I say, kind of buck us up to keep us going. But if we really want to see how things are, we even let those go. If you sit for a while, all the meanings aren't the same anymore. It just isn't as permanent as it feels. And it's bigger than it feels. You know, we narrow our life down and identify it in such a careful way that it makes us feel safe. And it makes us feel like we have something to stand on. But the more we practice, the more we realize that we really don't know. And that not knowing is okay. That not knowing leaves us open to a great deal more, gives us much more, much bigger stage on which to work. But it's not a pretty picture sometimes. It's hard. François?
I'm still trying to have a solid understanding of this form and emptiness. I think for me, I understand the form, the loss of my family, soon to be moving to Portland, it looks like, to be separated from the children. That's suffering in that form. The emptiness associated with that is, I don't know, just accepting.
It doesn't help.
Something's got to help. And what I mean by that, that you have to come to a place of peace of mind with it at some point. And one thing that I've noticed at my workplace is other families who are being torn apart also. And just realizing I'm not alone, taking a little bit of time and trying to console somebody else who's in a similar situation. I don't know if that's the emptiness that we were talking about.
That's the compassion side of it.
It is, and take a little time to help somebody else through the difficult passage also, and then after that it'll be whatever it is.
Yes. And in evaluating it, one way of thinking about emptiness is that all of our evaluations are totally arbitrary, and they always tell a story about the farmer and the horse and the boy that has to go to the army, and then he gets hurt and everything is fine, and then something else happens and it's terrible, and then something, and so even in a situation like yours, things will come up that would never have come up before that will inform and enlighten you. So,
oh yes, this has been a great night.
Yes, yes. That's what I said when I had cancer. You know, I finally got grateful for it because it though it was so difficult, it also was taught me so much. Thank you. Julian?
There's a lot of like writers or artists that their approach is, at least in their work, that nothing is arbitrary. There's a structure that they're whipping up, so to speak.
Oh, that's the fun of it. That's the fun of art.
So,
and really brilliant art is art that can show emptiness through the form. I always think of Chardin's paintings. Do you know his paintings? He did a lot of still lifes in the 1600s. Very, very beautiful. And they're just pots and plates and stuff, but something shines through. You feel it. They're not just pots and plates, that the whole thing is shining through.
There's a novel, there's one particular novel I'm thinking of, like it ends right at the beginning of where you started from.
Yeah. That's very tricky.
You see the structure.
Yeah. Yeah. But every art is that way. It's a construction of somebody's mind. That's why it's so interesting to look at art and to read books, because you're actually going into somebody else's mind, which is your mind also. And that's why we groove on it, because we feel it. We recognize it. It resonates with us. And it opens up new ways of thinking at the same time. So it's a wonderful, very important kind of game that we do. Movies are the same.
There's good writing and
oh, yes.
Bad writing.
Oh, yes. Good movies, bad movies.
One of my, thoughts about it is when you're actually with the form that, the emptiness, but it's very, you have to be extremely intimate with the form, with the language, with the
experiences
and all that.
Exactly. Yeah.
It takes
real self-sacrifice, usually, to be able to express in such a profound way. You have to kind of give up everything else for the sake of what you're making. It's wonderful to sit and have some kind of art that you do after you get up, to make that a part of your practice, to sit, and then flower arranging is one of the traditional ones. It's based on Zazen. Of course, our sewing, the sewing of the okesa, but any drawing or writing or painting that we do, in context of Zazen, becomes something different from the way it usually is. Nothing you can put your finger on, but it becomes much more of a real expression, or a true expression, I guess. And we're always aiming for the truth. Well, it's 8:00.